Jane Davidson of Davidson Communications regarding the closing of Trent University's downtown college, which is item 15 of report 37 of the general committee. Jane. You have something, district?
I have.
See the clerk will. Take it.
Madam Mayor, members of council, I've just chopped my speech to pieces once I heard about the timelines. But thank you so much for giving us a chance to bring our concerns about the proposed closing of the downtown colleges before you this evening. I'm speaking both as a taxpayer tonight that runs a business here in Peterborough and as an alumna of the university. Now, I learned from a document out of the Trent Economics Department in an update from an official report by Professor Torben Drews's, in his 1995 study that the local annual economic impact of the university is $118.8 million and that the direct local expenditure attributable to Trent University is $59.4 million. According to the study, 3,794 off-campus students, most of whom live downtown close to the colleges, spend $28.6 million annually. Tonight you'll hear from Professor that the notion that the colleges must die in order that Trent may live is in fact a myth. You will hear from Ray McGregor about what happens to business in downtown blocks when the students go away. And you will hear from student and senior senator for Robinson College's Mike Ezo about how important Trent downtown colleges are to him and students like him. But you can't move character and spirit up the road and stuff it into a new cheaply built dormitory and expect it to survive. It's not going to happen. There's a couple of things you haven't heard. One is that the university historically belongs to us, the citizens of Peterborough, because without us, it wouldn't be here in the first place. In 1963, 450 campaign workers kicked off a $1.5 million fundraising campaign to bring a university to this city. Labor pledged and management matched it. Fully 3,000 out of 4,000 GE workers pledged monthly for 5 years so that Peterborough could have a university. The Examiner at the time said it was the largest community undertaking of its kind in the history of Peterborough. The Peterborough Foundation gave $75,000. This was 1963, remember, so imagine that in today's dollars. Sergeant Hardware threw in $10,000. West Clox was a driving force in the fundraising efforts. The Examiner reported that all labor in Peterborough was behind Trent University. When the university held its opening ceremonies in October 1964, the Governor General himself came to officiate in full official regalia, complete with feathers flying from his hat. Over 2,000 people lined Rubidge and Sherbrooke Streets to see him officially open Trent at Rubidge Hall. And his first stop was City Hall. Trent going early didn't happen at all. It started out in the minds of some local businessmen in 1955 as a junior college. In fact, the then chair of Quaker Oats wrote a letter printed in full in the Examiner promoting the college, and I quote, that will pay dividends for generations to come and benefit directly and indirectly to every man, woman, and child in Peterborough. The then Minister of Education scotched the idea, saying the little college wouldn't stand a chance because Ryerson was too close by and he refused any money. Undaunted, the core group decided to go for a university instead and started fundraising with a vengeance. They succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. Remember, they went up against the government of the time, and they won. The first president of the university, T.H.B. Simons, advanced the principle of town and gown. The university was always a community endeavor. Always. So committed was President Simons to the community-university synergy that he promised formally and in writing in 1964, and you have that in your documents, that the downtown colleges would never close. That's right. They were always to remain open. Because President Simons knew that it made damn good business sense to the local economy, and it made good sense to the students who would benefit from closeness to the community. The students, as you have seen, have taken it from there. Many graduates settled here and started businesses. Like me, they pay taxes and own homes. And like me, they don't like the idea of sitting by while their beloved colleges are destroyed for what looks to us like a quick cash grab. You've all read the papers and by now have a pretty good sense of how the university founders feel about this idea, of how many alumni feel about this idea, including James Orbinski, our Nobel Prize winner with Médecins Sans Frontières. You have a good idea of how the downtown students feel about it, and last but not least, the merchant community, which depends to a large measure on the Trent students for its livelihood. Well, you have a pretty good idea, or you will have, how they feel about it. Tonight, I would like City Council to put and pass a motion to support keeping the downtown colleges of Trent University open. Thank you very much. I'll turn over to Professor Nader.
There may be questions, Jane.
Okay.
Does anyone have a question for Ms. Davidson? Yes.
A question.
Councillor
Edwards. Yes, thank you for your presentation. You mentioned, or it does mention in the text of this, about dormitories, cheap dormitories up the road. Do you anticipate that Trent University is going to build dormitories on the NASA campus?
We understand that's part of the super build application. And I'm probably not the best person to go into the details on that, but yes, that is our understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions? Councillor Branson.
Thank you, Jane. I had several calls about this, and I was just curious why people aren't lobbying. Like, why aren't you lobbying the university for these changes? Because they're the ones, the Board of Governors, that could make them.
I hope you can hear the response.
I'm asking it specifically because of the response I got on the phone today, and I think
it's a very good question, and I think that the general feeling is, and I hope that my colleagues behind me who are coming after me will correct me if I goof on the details, because I came in after those efforts failed, and that's why I got involved. Senate voted down the Superville proposal 3 days after that. It was at the Board of Governors, and it was overturned. And that's how it ended up in the hands of the province. It was the hastiest thing I think that's ever been done, and it historically set a precedent. The Board of Governors at Trent University has never overturned a decision by its Senate, ever. And so all efforts, the thing was rammed through, and all efforts were ignored. Now, I know many people made delegations to the administration. I wasn't party to that, so it's hard for me to speak to it. But the general sense was that they didn't get anywhere. And that's one of the reasons we're here, because we do feel the city and the university are linked, that the university belongs in spirit and historically to the city. And we need your help.
Thank you. I have councillors Leo Hall and McIntyre.
Thank you, Worship. Through your worship to Ms. Davidson, thank you very much for your presentation. I want to read a paragraph from a letter we received from Bonnie Patterson. I just asked you to respond to it. They helped.
I'll do my best.
It's paragraph 3, and I quote, "The cost of having 3 campuses in Peterborough are not sustainable. The buildings at Peter Robertson and Catherine Parr Trail Colleges are not only old, heavily mortgaged and in the need of extensive renovation. They cost twice as much to operate. Affection and nostalgia can no longer justify overlooking how these operations exacerbate the university's financial situation."
Thank you. I would love to respond to those, and I know that Professor Nader is sitting behind me with the numbers that actually counter those statements in great detail, and
perhaps
he is a statistician.
Perhaps, Councillor
Leo, could reserve my questions for Professor Nader?
Yes, yeah. I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Councillor Hall.
Jane, thank you very much for your presentation. This question, I'm gonna let you just give it to us here. What do you think about the argument about that City Council should stay out of this debate?
Obviously, we don't believe that, or we wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't ask you to look at this. And we wanted a chance to put all the facts before you. It's hard to address. I don't want to be drawn into a position of criticizing City Council. That's really not my intention. We want your help. We want you to understand why this is so important. The economic arguments, the cultural arguments, the historical precedents, all of those things are terribly important. And quite frankly, I don't want our city council to be accused of having sat by while this happened. And I'm second-guessing you, but I don't think you want to either.
Councilor McIntyre?
Jane, you weren't suggesting in any way that the Board of Directors doesn't have the right to overturn a Senate decision, were you, if they so choose?
That's,
if they had never done it, doesn't mean that they don't have the right to do that.
You would be asking me to wade into touchy legal waters if I got into speculating on that. I just wanted you to have the information that it hadn't happened in the past and that it was a huge shock to a community that was used to a more timely democratic process where they had a chance to examine all the details, the figures, and perhaps come up with some counter proposals. So people feel that they were not given an opportunity ever in this process to protest, to counteract, and to put their own proposals. I am not in a position, I'm not a lawyer, to make that judgment on the question you just asked.
Any further questions for Jane? Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.
The speakers are coming in the order you listed.